Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, my name's Stuart Miles and welcome to the Pocket Lint podcast. Apple has held its annual developer conference, WWDC, this week, announcing new updates to pretty much everything, including iOS, iPadOS, macOS, watchOS, tvOS, iCloud, HomeKit, privacy, and plenty more. Right, yes, I'm sure there's some other bits that I've forgotten there as well. But how do all these new changes affect the way you use your iPhone or iPad or any other Apple device for that matter? And has it been a good or bad year for those looking for exciting new things to play with? Well, joining me to discuss all the news is Pocket Lint's Britta O'Boyle and Dan Grabham, who've been feverishly taking in all that news so we can talk about it today. Brit, let's start with you. What do we think about the new changes to iOS 15?
I think there's actually quite good ones coming to iOS 15. There's obviously loads, which I noticed when I was doing our feature on it. But some of the big ones would probably be the focus feature.
Yeah, so let's talk about that for a little bit then. For those that weren't watching the show and haven't had a chance to catch up, what does focus do?
So it allows you to filter out your notifications based on your status, I suppose would be the best way to describe it. And there seems to be four main status options that you can choose from, personal, work, sleep, and do not disturb, although I think that changes on watch a little bit. And then you can also set a custom focus that you can choose what you like for that, maybe exercise or something. And then you can decide what notifications will come through. And you could also change your home screen based on what you would like. So you can sort of ignore, you can basically not have apps like Instagram or Facebook or any social media stuff so that you don't get, basically so you don't get tempted by stuff, I suppose, would be is how they're trying to play it, which is quite interesting, really, I guess.
Do you think you'll use it? I mean, Dan, are you going to use it?
Definitely, because notifications are something I struggle with, especially WhatsApp stuff coming in from various groups and stuff. So, yeah, absolutely, I'll be using it.
I must admit, with WhatsApp, I have kind of any large group I've got, I've just muted for a year straight away. Because then that's, you know, just stops me worrying about that. And I've kind of, I suppose, personally, on my iPhone use, I've now turned off most of the badges for anything. You know, that little, like, you've got this many.
Yeah, I've got them all turned off because I hate the badges. I for phone calls, yes, I want to know that I've missed a call, but actually I don't need to know that I've got however many unread emails, thanks.
Now, this is something I found really interesting, and having covered the industry for so long, is that a lot of people have kind of tried to do this before. Like, I remember the Nokia E51, there's an old phone for you, that kind of allowed you to have a work mode and a play mode. And when I tried that at the time, it was like, well, oh, I've forgotten the other app. You know, then you've got to boot out one to the other. Now, I know they're saying this is just changing the home screens, but do you think that people will go through that process of trying to set up multiple screens of like, right, I'm going to fitness, or I'm going to work, or I've now got my weekend screen or things like that, or just they'll do it for a bit and then think, oh, you know, maybe I'll just have access to everything as normal?
I think that probably depends on the kind of job that you do, perhaps, in some cases. And in other cases, it probably depends on the kind of person you are too. Like, some people probably would like the idea of that, whereas others don't like the thought of not being able to see all of your notifications come through, or fear of missing something important or whatever. So I guess it just depends on how you are as a person. But I mean, it's quite an interesting way of doing things, and I'd definitely give it a go, even if I don't use it all the time afterwards. But you might as well try, right? See if you can.
You can try anything once.
Exactly.
Nice things twice. Right, so that was one of the big features. What other features have we got that's exciting within iOS 15?
Quite a lot coming to FaceTime, which I thought was quite interesting. There was voice isolation feature, which is probably quite good for things if you are trying to speak to like someone, and then you can't, if they can't hear you because your washing machine's on or what have you, or your kids are shouting in the background, I think that would be quite a useful feature to have if it works. They've also got spatial audio coming to that. And then there's the Facebook links, which is probably one of the most interesting because it allows Android and Windows users to join a FaceTime.
Yeah.
Cool.
Now, Dan, you're a big Zoom user. I know you've been using it quite heavily over the last year. Do you think this is too little too late, or do you think people will switch over?
Well, I don't think people would switch over necessarily. I mean, it's sort of FaceTime is, from my sort of experience, you call someone and you just happen to be a FaceTime call instead of a normal phone call. Whereas, you know, a Zoom, you set up for a work meeting or you set it up for, and it's the same with like Google Meet or lots of other things as well. You know, you just you set it up for a specific occasion, whereas FaceTime feels a bit more sort of ad hoc, a bit like Facebook Messengers, I suppose, or WhatsApp calling or whatever. And so the features are welcome, but yes, it feels like it's a bit after the fact, doesn't it?
To me, it's kind of, it feels like a Zoom Lite, where it's kind of giving that opportunity. And, you know, and there are times where I'm on a FaceTime call because it's just easier and you think, oh, I want to share my screen, and you can't. But I thought and this is one of the things I know you wanted to talk about, and so we could jump into it now, because before we go on to Mac OS, is that sense of there are lots of things that are here that then tie into the ecosystem massively across the board. And one of the interesting things I thought with the FaceTime stuff is that share with you, because it's that idea of starting to share not only your screen but also like what you're watching on TV or other things.
Yeah, yeah. And it brings those things into other apps, doesn't it, Britt?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and it makes it sort of an experience that everybody can enjoy, not just you, I suppose, which is quite fun. Although not everyone likes the same thing to watch, that's the only problem with that, right?
Well, yeah, and I did notice, when we come onto this in a bit, there was some sort of AI algorithm stuff with TV that allows you to try and work out who's the lowest common denominator in the room, which for me is normally like a small child, which means you just end up watching something that's not very exciting at all. Right, so that's iOS. iPadOS brings in multitasking, Dan, doesn't it? And how do you feel that's going to work?
I actually feel this is quite a big development. It's kind of a step on, well, it is a step on from what was there before. But after, you know, this time last year, I wrote an opinion piece saying it's not time for, you know, the multitasking on the Mac, on the iPad is so far behind the Mac. And, you know, what we've got now with Apple Silicon and the same chips in Macs and iPads, which we didn't have then, actually, you know, we've basically got a situation where the same, you know, they're so similar, you know, between iOS, iPadOS and Mac, that it seems a bit odd that we haven't got sort of full support for putting Windows wherever you like and that kind of thing on the iPad, obvious, and external display support still, proper external display support. But these multitasking features are a step in the right direction, and they do, you know, basically make it easier to use multiple instances of the same app. It's kind of, the way they've set it up is a bit like the multiple desktops on a Mac or a Windows 10 PC. And that, you know, being able to have those apps, you know, effectively open all the time, but just in different sort of being able to sort of flick through those sort of desktops, for want of a better word, you know, will actually change, you know, how many apps you can practically use at the same time on an iPad.
Yeah, I thought it's really interesting as an iPad Pro user, and I've been playing with the M1 iPad as well. I think on the multitasking thing, it felt to me that a lot of the time when you're multitasking on an iPad, even if you've got the magic keyboard or a trackpad attached or a mouse or whatever, there was still currently a lot of commands that you have to do where you have to use your finger on the screen. You can't use a mouse to, you know, to pull a new app in or things like that. And it felt the idea now of, you know, a button at the top, or, you know, this idea that you can, you know, there are effectively hotspots on the screen now that you can move a trackpad, you know, move the cursor to, that would then make multitasking easier, will mean that it's a lot easier to use with a trackpad and mouse rather than having to revert to your finger and sort of these hidden commands and controls that, you know, might not be as obvious or as intuitive as you thought about it.
Yeah, definitely, because they you know, they've talked about not putting, they clearly don't want to put touch on the Mac, which is obviously something we've touched on the podcast numerous times before. And you know, they've said that the iPad is all about touch, or about this intuitive sort of way of doing it. But yes, that has been that's clearly a problem where you've got your hands on a mouse and keyboard or a keyboard and trackpad, but then you're having to touch the screen as well. It's just there's something missing from that experience, because it just doesn't gel properly when you're trying to be productive, basically.
What I was surprised about, though, from an iPad OS perspective, was that apart from the multitasking and obviously taking quite a few features from iOS 15, you know, like the focus Brit and things like that, was it just still didn't seem to have something there to really utilize the power of the M1 and the iPad Pro. But I don't know, I was expecting more.
Yeah. As I mentioned before, you know, you can connect to the iPad to an external display, but it doesn't work in the same way a Mac would on a Excel display. Now that iPad you've got there has got Thunderbolt, and you're thinking, well, actually, what's the barrier there? There isn't one. So it's only that it might be a feature they introduce next year or whatever, but it feels like it's so, you know, it's so gradual, whereas they could just get on and do it.
And there seemed to be a lot of influence and a lot of excitement about, you know, app library and widgets and all that stuff coming, as if they'd reinvented everything and this was the first time we'd ever seen it. We were like, hang on a minute, this was on the iPhone and iOS 14. So moving on to Mac OS, one of the key features, and again, this is all about this crossover and also, I wrote an opinion piece about this week as well, about this idea that Apple, to really enjoy and benefit from the Apple ecosystem, you need lots of Apple devices rather than just an iPhone or an iPad, is universal control. How, let's start talking about that, and then we can gradually switch over into the Mac OS.
I mean, universal control looks stunning, really, in terms of what it could do for people. But actually, you know, you then, and so I'll explain what it is first. You can bring an iPad alongside a Mac, and basically, you know, we've been able to use it as a second screen already with the sidecar app or functionality. But this means that you can use the keyboard and trackpad on the Mac and effectively drag them over to the iPad. You change focus in the way you would kind of do if you had, say, AirPods on two different devices, and work between them. And you can even, say, have two Macs and an iPad and do it and sort of move your cursor between all three, which it seems like it could be pretty powerful, really, until you sort of wonder, well, if I can, you know, what kind of scenarios would I do that with? And maybe it is as simple as, you know, doing emails on one device and
yeah, I got the feeling it was all about sort of, well, you've created something in Procreate or something on, you know, Photoshop on one device because you've been using the pencil and therefore you've drawn something, and now you want to just immediate, rather than having the, let's press this button to share it with, you know, AirDrop it over to the other device, you just go off and literally put them together and drag from one to the other. I was going to say, but so that's kind of, but again, it's this thing of like, well, you've got this expensive iMac or Mac Pro, and then you've also got an iPad, which you've added to the side. So you need two of them to work. Interestingly, you can only do it, you can do it left to right or right to left. And you can then, I think maybe perhaps it, more interesting is you can then share other devices, you know, between one iMac to a MacBook Pro or Mac to a Mac or what have you. But what's new and exciting that's appealing to you in Mac OS?
Well, Mac OS Monterey is the version 12, but isn't really, I mean, you know, considering we were 20 years on version 10 and then we moved to 11 last year and now 12, it sort of feels like a bit disappointing, really, in terms of, you know, the amount of new features, because it feels like this is definitely a sort of a consolidation year for Mac OS, because obviously we've moved to Apple, well, Apple are moving to Apple Silicon, but there's still reportedly reportedly going to introduce another Intel Mac Pro, for example. So that you've got this kind of two-tier, system to Mac OS in a way. So it feels like we're sort of on a consolidation year while all that sort of plays out. But you know, there was some interesting features and focus is there again. In terms of all the FaceTime stuff, that's there again, and SharePlay. And one of the interesting things is you can basically AirPlay from an iPhone to a Mac screen now, which it could be quite useful. In fact, if you've got it could be quite brilliant actually. If you've got an iMac and an iPhone, you can use it as your TV or whatever. That's pretty cool. Safari's, I think, the interesting one, and we didn't touch on it with the iOS stuff. That has been redesigned and given a much simpler design. And really, on the Mac, it isn't that much different, but it is quite different on iOS and iPadOS. And so that will be quite a if people have been using Safari, which obviously they tend to on an iPhone, but they might not tend to on a desktop, it will be quite a different experience for them.
And Britt, this kind of, as we've touched on this already, it's this idea that everything seems to be merging together. It's it's notes across everything. It's Safari is trying to deliver the same experience to across everything. Do you think that's a good thing, or do you think people like the sort of the difference sometimes?
I think it's a great thing if you've got Apple devices and you're someone that is prepared to invest in all of those, but you're talking quite a lot of cash there if you want a Mac and an iPad and an iPhone and everything. And it's obviously great if they all seamlessly work together, which they do in a lot of cases at the moment. So anything that helps with that, I can't see that being a bad thing. But obviously it's whether or not you can just have an iPhone now, or do you need to have an iPhone, a Mac, and an iPad to be able to get the best experience out of things? And I think if they go down that route, that's a little bit sad, because not everybody would be able to benefit from that, because it's a lot.
And I wonder whether, how you think about this, whether, previous years it's been very cut and dry. It's like, here is iOS 15, here is iPad, here is, Mac OS or what have you, and here's what we're doing here. And this year Apple seemed to struggle with it. It's that sort of sense of, we've got this app, and it kind of, you almost wanted them to do it via app. This is what Safari is going to look like across all these devices. Here's what Notes is going to look across all these devices, rather than this kind of, it doesn't feel like it's as siloed as it used to be.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't as clear cut. Like during the presentation, iOS 15 sort of switched between lots of different things. So it was actually quite difficult during it to try and figure out what was actually happening on just iOS, or whether it was coming to all the others as well. It was a little bit confusing, and by app probably would have been a better way to present, I think, because there are lots of different things happening across the board, and it does make it quite difficult to sort of see what you're going to get from just one of them rather than all of them.
And I suppose if you start to go by app, it'd be interesting to see whether, something that Chris raised earlier this week is that sense of we only get one Safari update really per year, or one big update to FaceTime. And if you separate them out into apps, then you can constantly, they become different teams and they can start running at their own pace rather than being, intertwined, with everything else in the same way.
Yeah.
That said, if you've got lots of stuff being shared, it's different technologies being shared across different apps, and you can, share with FaceTime, you can then share to TV and do all these other bits, then it kind of breaks from that as well. So it must be a difficult decision for them at the moment.
Yeah, I'd agree with that for sure.
Okay, so one of the things that didn't necessarily get that much love this week was watchOS and even tvOS. I thought they were quite surprising, considering tvOS is, we've just had an Apple TV 4K, a new box launched only, a month or two ago. And watch, obviously, we've got, suspectedly got new watches coming later this year. Do you think this is a sign that those two platforms have kind of got to the end of where they are, and therefore there's not a huge amount to add to it that they don't already offer? Right.
I'm hoping that watchOS there'll be more in September, but I'm hoping that it's the Series 7 that will need, you might need some extra hardware in order to offer some more features. So I think that, like sleep tracking, for example, that was quite, I was hoping for a bigger update than that, to be honest, given their competition in that department. I mean, Fitbit are way ahead there, and Garmin, to be honest. So it would have been nice to have seen a few more features added in that case, but perhaps when the Series 7 gets announced, obviously they can talk about it in June, because we haven't even had it confirmed yet. So I'm hoping that perhaps there'll be some extra bits coming out of that if there's some different sensors on board.
They've kind of held it back because there is quite a lot coming from a hardware perspective.
Yeah, that's what I'd like to think, whether or not that's the case. get that mindfulness app. So that's looking at a little bit of, they're going down a little bit of the road of stress tracking, perhaps, but not quite as full on as some others are doing. So, I mean, I guess you sort of, just depends on, maybe there'll be a skin sensor on board the 7 and then they can do some more with that as well. Who knows?
Yeah, it definitely felt like they were holding back on watchOS, didn't it? It was nothing, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, look, we've got a new, I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? It's the Mindful app, which didn't seem, you know, oh, we've added Pilates as an exercise fitness thing. We've got, you know, a new watch face, which wasn't exactly.
Which begs the question, why, it's like a hour and a half, 2 hours, wasn't it? I can't, you know, my mind went to a bit of mush, really. But like, it kind of, far better off picking out some highlights, like shared with you in SharePlay, and just talking about that and saying it's going to be across everything, and all the HomeKit stuff and that kind of thing, and saying it's going to be across everything, and doing it that way, because I think that'd be much more impactful.
Yeah, and I think with the tvOS stuff as well, that seemed to be, again, that was like, oh, like there's not much here. It's this interesting thing of where you can now, as I say, this lowest common denominator of seeing who you're watching television with, and then being able to do that. One of the things they didn't even announce on stage, which I saw after the fact, which I thought quite interesting, was this idea that you'll soon be able to use your Face ID on your iPhone to log into things, because it just, you know, it will know that you've got that there, and therefore that connected.
And why didn't they announce that on stage? Because
that's interesting, right?
That's actually interesting, isn't it? I you know, like the home, you know, you can use Apple TV with HomePod Mini. Well, you know, we
knew that from the original HomePod.
Yeah, and the HomeKit stuff and the Shared With You and Siri stuff, it's all kind of minor stuff. And you think that, but it's not actually really new. But then the Face ID thing was like, oh, cool, that's quite cool.
The thing that I really wanted, which again, they didn't really, they kind of briefed over, was this spatial audio on support for AirPods and AirPod Max, which is, you know, this sounds really strange. I've got young family, and so therefore, if I want to watch a big blockbuster, you know, Army of the Dead or something along those lines, there's lots of gunfire and all the other stuff, I just want to be able to put headphones on and just listen, you know, late into the night without thinking, okay, I'm just going to blast everybody out with Dolby Atmos and all the other stuff. And at the moment, you can't do that, and yet that's coming. And to me, that makes much more valid purchase for the AirPods Max, which are quite expensive headphones. But if you know they're going to be like a home cinema headphones for you, then that kind of, to me, that says, great, this is, you know, that suddenly gives me another reason to go and buy them.
And it's a real reason to buy an Apple TV, isn't it, compared to another device if you've already got AirPods Pro, for example.
Yeah.
Obviously the Apple TV is a more expensive device than, say, Amazon's devices, and you know, you need a good reason to spend that cash, and that might be it.
Yeah. So right, let's move on to the other bits. Privacy, always a big thing for them to beat the privacy drum. It seems like Apple are gearing this up a notch even more this time round. Britt, what do you think this is? I mean, it feels like it's a welcomed scenario, but you can also see that it's a nice sideswipe at people like Facebook and others.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think it'll be interesting to have a look at the app report that they're planning to offer with that, where it will show you what apps are using your contacts, photos, location, I think a couple of other things in the last 7 days, I think the idea behind that is. And it will also tell you who else they've contacted. So maybe you'll be able to find out how you end up with emails from goodness knows who. Just logging into one thing. So I do think it will be definitely very interesting to see what apps are actually not using your data in the way that you would perhaps like if you were given the choice. So definitely that. And the hide my email is also quite interesting, I think, because sometimes you might want to email without actually revealing your email and then having that out there rather than hidden behind something.
Yeah, and Dan, what do you think of this? I mean, effectively, they've renamed everything, haven't they? It was called iCloud. That now just remains for the free service. Anything that you pay for becomes iCloud Plus. That then goes through to, you know, they've now effectively added a VPN to this series, you know, to this scenario. Do you think that's a sensible thing?
I think there's a lot of benefit to it. Yeah, I mean, there's certain people that want a VPN, and it makes iCloud more appealing. iCloud Plus more appealing. One thing I guess it does give you, it gives you the, if you've got home, obviously there aren't any of these devices at the moment, but HomeKit compatible cameras, for example, you know, the secure video aspects, you know, you can take, I think you can have a bunch of cameras on.
Like, yeah, it's depending on how much you pay. Yes. It's unlimited if you're on the top tier, if you're on the 2 terabyte iCloud thing. If you're only going for the, you know, the 50K or 50 gig or whatever it is, it's, you only get one camera.
So that aspect of it is a bit like, say, the Ring Protect plan, isn't it? And so they're sort of bundling up other features to cover off competitors, essentially, aren't they? I'm not sure, you know, they obviously don't see these things as big money spinners, otherwise they'd separate them out, I guess. But you know, again, they just want you to have, you know, their overall subscriptions, and they'll give you whatever they want to keep within their ecosystem.
What I did think was an interesting one that they showed, and they didn't spend a huge amount of time on this, but this is this the legacy contact and the account recovery contact, which I thought was quite an interesting idea. Obviously, we're moving into, certainly the legacy one, we're obviously moving into a digital age where, unfortunately, people die. And when they die, their phones are then locked completely. And so you can't get any of the memories or information off that phone. It now turns out there obviously is a legacy contact where it allows you to, if you send a death certificate to Apple, you can, and they've listed you as a legacy contact, you can then get access to, you know, they'll unlock that phone remotely for you. Talking to Apple after the fact, they told me that even they don't know who the legacy contact is, but obviously you'll get alerted by the fact that, oh, someone's left you their phone and you know, they've unfortunately no longer with us. But it's certainly, I thought it was a real sign of the times that we are, you know, a lot of people's lives are digital now and are locked up within their phones or within their iCloud accounts.
Yeah, and I think this is going to become a bigger issue, isn't it, over time? You know, it's an issue that Facebook have struggled with as well over time. I mean, obviously, they've got procedures in place now. But, yeah, it is an issue because whereas in the olden days, you could have looked at someone's address book and found out all their contacts, phone numbers and what have you, if you need to, you know, get hold of them and deliver unfortunate news or whatever. Whereas now, you know, it's all on the phone or iCloud or, you know, on Google's cloud or whatever. And, you know, you can't necessarily get that information. So that's, you know, it is a good feature.
Right. So the final question to both of you, Britt, I'm going to go first because I'm being mean. what was the one thing that you came out of WWDC keynote thinking, yeah, that's really cool. I really like it. And then I'm going to come to you, Dan.
I would actually have to say the focus in or across all of them, because they work across it all. I think that was interesting. I think that has potential to be really quite good for certain aspects of your life, and hopefully focusing more on your family or yourself rather than what your phone's doing.
And Dan?
I think the AirPlay to Mac stuff, because you know, being able to use a Mac as a, you know, effectively an output for stuff you're doing on your phone, you know, that's quite appealing, I think.
And I'm going to be really cheeky and say to both of you, what thing do you wish they'd announced that they didn't?
Better sleep tracking on watch for me.
And I'm going to go, one of many features I want on iPad OS external display support.
There we go. You're rocking that external display. All right. You're desperate. Surely just use, just get that big iMac that you've probably still got on loan and just AirPlay to Mac, Dan.
Exactly.
That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Until next time, pip pip.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.